This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast with a new episode every week. You can find at thehollywoodoutsider.com or on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, or anywhere else you can find a podcast feed. My name is Aaron Peterson, and I will be your host for this special episode of The Hollywood Outsider, where I'm going to interview Brian Coyne. He's a writer-director of the new horror film Infernal, which is releasing in theaters and on video on demand on April 10th. What is Infernal, you ask? Well, basically, it tells the story of new parents, Nathan and Sophia. Their daughter, Imogen, seem to exhibit issues that make her appear autistic. As the film progresses and the parents are forced to seek out more and more answers, it becomes increasingly evident that something a little bit more sinister and more supernatural is involved. The film then focuses on Nathan's attempt to save both his daughter and his family. Kind of during the course of the interview, you'll hear me compare it to a couple films. It's not because I'm saying that this is the kind of film that he's trying to emulate. It's just that when you're trying to obviously explain to an audience, the quickest way to say it's in this vein. It's kind of a found footage movie with a feel of Insidious, wrapped with Omen, wrapped with a couple other things, which you'll hear in the interview. It's actually a very interesting interview. For this interview, we sat down with Brian. We talk about how his career began, his take on filming and found footage style, horror itself, the state of horror itself, as well as what's coming out next for him. It's actually, he's a really nice guy, very candid interview. He's very open and honest about all aspects. You know, he doesn't seem to hold anything back, and we could do a little bit more of that when we're talking about Hollywood. Really hope you guys enjoy it. Very nice guy. Please remember that this is a phone interview, so obviously there can be some delay and some sound fluctuation and whatnot, so be forgiving about that sort of thing. It's a really interesting interview. I think if you're a fan of film and horror, I think you're going to enjoy it. He was a good guy to talk to. Really enjoyed it. You don't want to hear me yap anymore. Here's my interview with Brian Coyne. Brian, are you there?
Yes, I am.
There we go. If you want, we can go ahead and start if you're ready.
Sure, man. Anything I should know or cursing? What should I have? Oh, any protocols?
No protocols. You say whatever you need to say, and if you need to be raunchy, it's up to you.
Oh, fucking fantastic. Thank
exactly.
you.
Exactly. Fucking A. Get it out. Well, first off, I want to know, before we talk to anybody that's a filmmaker, the one thing that I really like to know and our listeners like to know is what got you into filmmaking to begin with?
You know, the funny thing about me getting into filmmaking, it was, there's a couple things that happened. I come from a town that I literally call, you know, when people talk about like the gates outside of Hollywood that you need to break down to get inside?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm like fairly certain that literally, like if you were to Google map that shit, you would see Simi Valley, California as those gates.
Really?
You know, yeah, it was weird because like growing up in that area where like I love to note that, you know, Poltergeist was shot there. Robert Redford classic Sneakers was shot there.
That's a great movie. Great movie.
Are you a Sneakers fan?
I love Sneakers. Are you kidding me?
I love you then. That's amazing. There's two of us. It's great. Well, you, me, and Rob.
Yeah, and Dan Aykroyd. So. I'm sure he's still a fan.
Dan Aykroyd loves everything Dan Aykroyd does.
He sure does. Probably wants a sequel for this, too.
Yeah, exactly. God damn it. But so also, you know, I'm this true crime nut, and Spawn Ranch is out there, you know, where Manson hung out.
Yeah.
Between there and in the valley. At any rate, so... You know, I was always around something, and I say it's that kind of that gate that leads into Hollywood because most of the people who live outside it are a lot of people that do work in the industry, but normally they're like costume people or gaffers or et cetera, et cetera. And my next door neighbor as a kid, she was the personal assistant to one of the people that ran Growing Pain, the old TV show.
Okay. Oh, Kirk Cameron. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I wish I could meet him again today. Oh my God.
Did you meet him?
We so fucking get along. Mini like reverie of me meeting Kirk Cameron again.
He's a much more interesting guy nowadays than he was then.
Yeah.
For different reasons. Yeah.
You don't say. No, but so she could see that I was like taking an interest in movies. My parents initially, they didn't want me seeing a lot of things that were coming out at the time. That I was a kid,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, the Child's Play pictures or anything, that kind of shit. Pretty young guy. I'm 28. So they would have me watch the Universal Monster movies or, you know, Hammer films or anything. I said those were much better. But I was really just taking a bug to it. I just loved it. And so my next door neighbor, she would start taking me to sets. So I grew up around, like, anything was on TGIF Fridays on ABC.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, so it was a Boy Meets World episode of, like, just some fat kid walking around, you know?
Yeah.
But nobody noticed. But I got to see it all from the ground up. And then I ended up being an extra in a movie that I will never tell anybody about ever.
Why would, well, you don't have to say the movie, but why don't you want to tell people? Is it that bad a movie?
I think so.
Okay. All right. All right.
I think so. And I was a chubby kid. Of course, I'm like, I don't want them to see that shit. No, but it was a big, you know, like, growing up out there really made me feel like I could make movies, you know? And so I always was this crazy reader. I would read everything I could, and specifically comic books and genre novels, all that before I realized, you know, Salinger was pretty okay. But so I ended up just, you know, taking all my interests and putting them into one. And then I decided, you know what, fuck it. I really love doing this. So I'm not going to create a backup plan for myself like any smart human being would do. And
fair enough.
I just threw myself in.
Is it working out for you? I mean, you got a movie. You got a couple of them now.
Yeah, I got a, it's strange. It's like, I always forget how many things I've made. As director, you know, my first film was for Sony Pictures Television. It was a baseball documentary called Harvard Park. And I produced a picture called The Human Race. Came out last year through Accelerator. It was directed by Paul Huff. And then this one, it's so funny. I made Infernal, right? I wrote, produced, directed. I raised the money for this motherfucker. All at the end of 2013. Well, summer 2013, towards the end. And we made it, we sold it, but I tinkered with it for a long time. And in the interim, between tinkering with it, I went and made another movie called Utero, which I financed and wrote and directed and blah, blah. And now that Infernal's coming out, we're like kind of scurrying, going like, okay, get Utero done just so we could sell it, because the next few shows coming up, I really don't want to be back cataloged anymore, because now I know how that feels.
What do you mean? Like, how does it feel for you?
Oh, you start to... Here's the thing. I like, Infernal specifically was one of the first times where I probably too much took from my personal life.
Okay.
And I don't know if you've seen the film.
Yep, I've watched it. Yep.
Well, you know all the fighting.
There's a lot of... Yeah, there's a lot of anger in there.
God, there's a lot of anger.
There's a lot of anger.
A lot of cursing in front of a kid. Oof, it terrible stuff.
Seems like a real couple these days, but sure, yeah.
Yeah, but that was the thing. So, like, I didn't know. I was in a 5-year relationship, and I was engaged to this young lady. I didn't know how miserable the relationship was. And, you know, despite my friends telling me, you know, you're in a really shitty relationship, and me just not listening.
We never do. You know, we never do.
Yeah, you never do. When you're in it, you just overlook that.
Exactly.
And I didn't realize, and she worked on the film too. So imagine that. I guess what I was doing was really taking from our personal fights and my personal fears as a man, which I like to think the movie pretty gender neutral. I don't think that it really goes like it's pro dude or pro chick. I think it's pretty just pro human, pro parent. You know, it's not. They're both fallible, and they're both wrong in certain situations, and then one's right and one's wrong. You know, it's life, you know? And I thought that was something that was really missing from a lot of independent horror movies, probably because nobody cares. But I'd like to think there's a select group of people that would like to see, you know, some rather realistic wordplay mixed with their horror. But the whole concept, I guess, came from something in the back of my mind telling me that something wasn't right with my relationship. And I ended up sitting on it for a while because a little bit after the movie ended, after we had sold it and so on and so forth, mm-hmm. she straight up dumped me.
Oh, like, that's cold.
Horribly dumped me, dude. I can't even go into how, like, amazing this breakup was. It was like record books breakup. Like, took my cats, that sort of thing.
Took your cats?
took my cats.
That's fantastic.
Took some money. Strung me along for a good 4 or 5 months, which was my fault. And then went and married a woman in Reno.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
It's a different world.
That doesn't bother me at all. It's not that you married a woman. It's that you did everything that preceded that.
Yeah, you took my cats before you married her.
You took my fucking cats. You know, and that was like something that, I've been saying this as I've been, you know, talking to people about the picture, where there's a bit of bitterness. You always want to be like, you know what, be the bigger guy. Be the bigger guy.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck being the bigger guy. You got to get some shit off your chest sometimes.
So you know? Nathan is you getting shit off your chest?
Oh, my God. This movie, uh-huh. Utero, and at least the next one. Because we have two that are set up for this year. And one of them I'm calling my opus.
Wow.
I'm calling it, it is my, I'm done. I've said what I have to say. Because it's not just her. I'm just a kind of a Lloyd Dobler type, you know. I'm a dude that likes relationships. And takes inspiration from when they blow up.
You got fucked over so bad, it's going to take two movies to get it out of your system.
We'll say three.
Three. Yeah, that's really bad.
Three.
That's
fantastic. And part of me is proud of it in some senses because it's like, hey, some of our favorite songs that we listen to, all about the same thing.
Absolutely.
You know, but that's 3 minutes versus 2 hours. But hey, it's still...
You gotta get it out.
Go on.
You gotta get it out.
You gotta get it out. And I think there's a larger... Again, when it was 5 years, I'm a young guy, but this is 5 years, five fucking years. And, you know, my dad is a jazz musician. He's a bebop jazz player,
mm-hmm.
guitar player. And music's always been an incredibly important part of my life. And there was something about this song called Little Darlin' that Neil Hefti wrote, and that Joe Pass, who my dad learned from, and others have played. Kind of, it's pretty much a standard. But that song, I don't know, when I was a kid, just always, it's something about that song made me want to become a father. You know, unlike a lot of dudes these days, you know, I'm like, yes, I want a kid, damn it. But when you're in that 5-year relationship, you start staring at down the barrel of a gun, which is, you know, well, we're going to get married.
Mm-hmm.
And then certain things happen. And that was actually the germ of the idea for Infernal, where it's thinking like, oh shit, well, yeah, we probably have the Antichrist.
Well, that's what Imogene kind of is. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, which, you know, never say, but that's kind of what I believe.
That's true. You never say exactly. Well, I guess, and that's the trick, is you don't, and I've, by the time people are listening to this, they already know what the movie's about. But what I got from the movie was, it's kind of a combination. It's kind of, it has Omen, it has Insidious, it has a little bit of Paranormal Activity. It's kind of a melting pot of different films.
Yeah.
But at the crux of it is definitely Imogene is a little bit, something is going on with this kid. And
yeah.
How would you describe the movie? I mean, when you're out selling the movie, how do you describe it? Because that's kind of my take, but what's your take? You're the director.
I got to tell you, first off, it's your take. It has to begin as your take. Everything you just said is what I have to say initially. But what, because absolutely nobody beyond my mentor, people in my life, who I would say, hey, I think I'm going to write something that's basically Paranormal Activity meets The Omen meets Kramer versus Kramer.
Okay.
You know, like, that's where you lose them in the room. That's when they're like, or you could just have a ghost and being mean,
mm-hmm.
For 2 hours. And I don't really have that much interest in that. It's that, cause you know, always it's the same thing in a movie. Like, if you notice, like, shit, there's a demon in our house. Oh man, that sucks. I hate demons.
Mm-hmm.
I know, me too. We should, like, get them out of our house. All right, how are we going to do it? Series of mishaps. And then the everything gets figured out. It's kind of how the movie works.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. That's pretty accurate.
You know, but instead I'm like, well, what if you saw all those moments? These, like, found footage to me, like, I'm not the biggest found footage fan, but some of them, when they're done well, they're done extremely well. But I started thinking about the concept of these guys turn off the camera and they turn it back on. And that, to me, was very much a thing about mood. Like, I can get off the phone with you in a perfect mood.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I get back on the phone with you, I'm pissed off.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happened in the interim? You know, that's the stuff you don't see. And so to me, it was really hard. And to this day, it prevails to say to people, it's like, yeah, you know, everything you're saying is true. Yeah, Insidious, huge. I'm a huge fan of that movie. And a lot of that in there. These great pictures in there. But really, it becomes about two parents. Because what ends up happening when two parents can't get over themselves and they're always fighting,
mm-hmm.
and all this shit happens and they just overlook the child, well, something else is going to raise the child. You know, whether it be media
mm-hmm.
or whatever the fuck else, you know, something else will raise a child if you don't.
That's your something, someone, some, yeah, it will, that kid will grow up.
Yeah, it's something that, it was something like dealing with, and always, and this broke my heart. It's so constant. It's like, there's just one thing you think is wrong with your child, automatically autism. You don't even think about it, it's just autism.
I like it's that. Autism. I thought that was a nice touch, actually. And I really liked when Sophia, she says repeatedly throughout the movie, she's a broken child. I like that. I thought that was a nice, realistic look at it, because I've heard parents say that about their kids before.
Yeah, same here, man. And it's kind of devastating mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. Because you're like, doesn't mean your kid's broken at all. It just means that there are some things. But we all have them. And, well, you know, there's just this weird, I mean, I kind of felt like what I was doing was tracing on a really thin line there. You know, like bringing the whole autism angle into it.
Mm-hmm.
And discussing the STEM. You know, the concept of the STEM, which is real, which ended up being one of those happy accidents. But, like, you know, doing the research and then trying to, and there, I never wanted to tell you in the movie if she is or if she isn't, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And there have been some reviews coming in for the film, and I'm loving them. I'm loving even the ones that seem moderately negative, because they're pointing out things, and I'm like, oh, shit, yeah, well, that's what I wanted. Did not work for you, and God bless you. I mean, you're entitled to your opinion, and I support that, but that's exactly what I wanted. You know, I haven't gotten the one yet, which is like, you know, dude fucks up everything, it's all terrible, this and that. He doesn't know how to focus a camera, you know, this and the other thing. But, I don't know,
I got a question in terms of, you're talking about found footage. You know, that's like a popular genre right now. It's still a pretty popular genre, although I think it's kind of on the tail end, it seems like.
Oh, is it? Oh, yeah, it's crazy on the tail end.
Well, I mean, how does that work for you? I mean, you're the director, and I think that's one thing people never really understand. You know, I've got friends, and I've got a lot of film buffs that I know, and people that listen to our show and go to our website, you know, that sort of thing. I know what they're used to, and they think that it's a real easy way to make a movie. It's really not.
No, it's not.
Can you talk a little bit about what goes into that for you as a director? I mean, how you have to do all your shots for a found footage movie?
Well, okay. Well, first off, I'll say I am far less mannered than most people are. Again, going back to the concept of my dad being a jazz musician, where, you know, essentially, again, you know your key, you know what song you're playing, but how the fuck you play it, it's all up to you.
Mm-hmm.
That's pure improv. And that's kind of the way, see, I'm in a nice place in life where I get taken seriously around town, you know, I take meetings, I've written some things that people probably wouldn't think I would have written, et cetera, et cetera. But when you're doing something that's on a moderate to low budget, I like to approach it like a jazz standard. Like, I'm like, okay, well, this guy's like Neil Hefti wrote Little Darling. Great song.
Mm-hmm.
But the way Joe Pass plays it, he breaks all the rules. He breaks all the rules, but brings you the same melody and he brings you the same warmth in your heart, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I got to tell you, it's like trying to keep up with my contemporaries, and one of my good friends, somebody I'd take a bullet in the neck for, a cat named Adam Robitel. I want to say last year it came out, but he did a picture called The Taking of Deborah Logan.
I remember that one.
Which,
yep.
Oh, I just thought that guy just killed it. Mm-hmm. He just killed it. He did, and I think I remember saying to him, well, you were far more restrained than I was. In the sense that, like, there are shots, and if you listen to, I hope this isn't a shameful plug, but it's a shameful plug. When the DVD comes out in May, I think they're waiting to give the release date, but comes out in May, if you get the DVD, listen to my rambling-ass commentary, and I'm literally sitting there going, like, there's absolutely no reason for this angle.
You're critiquing your own film?
What's that?
You're critiquing your own film?
Oh, fuck yeah. Why wouldn't I? I mean, it's to me, like, I'm sitting there saying, like, I won't critique my dialogue. You can leave that alone. My dialogue is my best friend. But when you're setting up a shot, mm-hmm. you know, like, and there's something I was talking about earlier where I'm like, a lot of people think when you hear those grandiose words that people love to hear, pictures up, everybody gets ready, and they're like, oh, we gonna make a movie now. And then I come in, and I take a look at the monitor, and I go, this looks amazing, guys. And let's do it completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because of the feeling of improvisation. There was one day on the last shoot I had where it was just a horribly fast shoot, and there's like literally 12 days I had to get through, or 12 pages I had to get through. I'm like, fucking, I think it was 8 pages, actually, and we had half a day left. And so I spent like the other 3 pages I spent far too long on. And I was like, well, let's just do it in one shot. And everybody just looked at me like I was an asshole. And I was an asshole, but that's what they looked at me like was. And they're like, what do you mean one shot? And I'm like, well, get the jib and put the camera, I'll block the actors. Let's do it in one shot. And we did it in one shot. And sound footage is kind of, it's a playground that's a little bit easier to play in, but A, they're kind of harder to sell. That's the big one, selling it.
Right, like, right now or in general, just because of the way it's kind of teetered out a little bit?
It teetered out in oversaturation.
Yeah.
It's like you can't go on Netflix without seeing something like, oh, God, I love you guys to death, but real evil.
Mm-hmm.
You know, movies called, it's fucking clever because you say real, get it? it's a real, like a... It,
oh, it, I see what you did there.
You crazy son of a bitch.
It.
You know, it's like, what are you fucking doing? Like, the VHS movies notwithstanding, those are fucking phenomenal. But, you know, it's just like, it actually becomes a point where we start saying, like, my whole thing while making Infernal was, I'm never going to lie to you and tell you that this happened.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to start a fake Twitter account that the little Antichrist girl is tweeting pictures from. I'm never going to do anything like that. You're going to go for an hour, 40 minutes, whatever the fuck it is. It's really long. And you are going to sit there and hopefully have a good time or have a miserable time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, both things you should be able to have. But you're not going to walk out thinking that this little girl is really the son of a jackal. You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. not. It's.
I like it's that you're kind of. I like that you're open to criticism because you seem very wide open to it. As in, hey, if you like it, or you don't like it, I'm fine either way. You know, some people are really resistant to any kind of criticism.
Oh, you can't live that way. You know, like now, if you ask my manager,
mm-hmm.
you ask my manager whenever like I turn in the drafts, and like a studio person gives a note, which arguably they are what they are.
Yeah.
Or a producer gives a note, I tend to drag my feet
mm-hmm.
and complain really loud. But when it comes down to my film, you know, there's a very interesting thing where I was on, I hate the internet. I think it's the best and worst thing that ever happened to life.
Absolutely. I agree with that.
It so is. It's like, I see our trailers getting so many people looking at it, so many shares. So many people are going to the Facebook and liking it, and it's warming my heart, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing warms my heart more than when I'm reading, which I should not be doing, I read those talkbackers.
Oh, don't do that. Don't do that.
No, it's true. You don't do it. And I haven't done it in a while. But when somebody called me, thinking that these people are, that there are some people out there on the internet, which I'm very proud of them for knowing how to use the internet.
Mm-hmm.
But like when they'll be like, zero fucks given. I'm like, oh, damn, you are too fucking intelligent for me. You know, and it's like these people, somebody calls you a faggot. And
that's,
you're like,
that's still around? Really? That's a thing?
You're still calling people, how old are we?
Yeah, exactly.
The best one was, shit, I don't know if I can tell. I'm going to fucking tell. I don't care. So as far as I know, we're going to be in a very large retail chain store.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a good PC way to say it.
Okay.
A very large retail chain store. So this young lady who works as my assistant sometimes for me, she goes and she sees one of the comments. I think the guy called me a faggot. She's like, this dude just called you a faggot. I'm like, some dude on the internet? I'm like, yeah. She's like, yeah. I'm like, well, I mean, come on. My sexuality is questionable anyway, so that's fine. And she's like, no, but check this out. And she clicks on his profile. Dude's wearing a shirt for this large retail chain.
No.
And I'm like, oh, motherfucker. Okay. Yeah, you still get to stock my movie next month.
That's fantastic. So,
it's just that little moment. And then it's all good, though. It's just words, you know?
Well, everybody thinks they're a critic on the internet. And
well,
most
what the
of
fuck
them,
is that about? I mean, who said that was ever a thing?
You got me. And nobody puts thought into it. Nobody's trying to find the good in anything. Or, I mean, there's a lot of bad out there. I get that. But there's a lot of people that seem to feel it's their mission to destroy everything they don't like. And
it's incredible. And then there are also people, too. I mean, not to get tangential here. And obviously, you can see that I am. But, like, one of my favorite movies in 2013 was American Mary.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a huge, huge fan of the Jen and Self. And it's not in some sycophantic way. You know, I'd never say we're besties. You know, we've hung out socially a few times. But God damn it, do I love their movie. You know, I thought American Mary was bold, elegant, so many things you can't be today mm-hmm. in horror films. You know? But the second I would say, oh, my God, I love American Mary, and be like, yeah, it was because they're hot. Really?
It's that simple.
Yeah, they're hot, so that's why I'm like, oh, I love your movie.
You would love every movie. I mean, are there any movies where there's a lot of where there's a lot of ugly people? I don't really know many.
I think here's the thing. One of my favorite things to say in regards to that is The Graduate is one of my favorite movies of all time, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was actually one of my favorite things to say until he passed away, goddammit. Now it's not funny anymore, son of a bitch. But, like, one of my things I would say would be, like, you're totally right. I also kind of want to fuck Mike Nichols. So, you know, where are you going with this? It's like, it doesn't make any sense to me, though. It's like, instead of us all, but there's also two sides of the coin that I've done my own name, where... A lot of shit gets made,
mm-hmm.
and these people are making things from, I think, questionable motives. I think their motivation to make the product is questionable.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really have a story to tell. They don't really have anything behind them. They get a DSLR. They go in their backyard and say, hey, put this blood in your mouth, and I'm going to shoot you up right here, okay?
That sounds about
right. It's not safe. What's that?
That sounds about right. Yeah, it does sound about right.
Yeah, yeah. It's not safe. It's which is a huge thing for me. Safety is enormous. In seeing the picture, there is an effect at the end of the movie. We did a lot to make sure there was safety involved. You know,
mm-hmm.
and I'm hearing these stories about these kids that are just like, I'll make this movie and this killer is running around backwoods and he's gonna stab this person with a machete in the asshole.
That's,
and I'm like, okay, why am I watching it? Like, not necessarily, I don't wake up in the morning. I love the Friday the 13th movies a lot, but I don't really wake up going like, I want to see a backwoods murder romp with machetes and assholes.
Now I kind of do. I'll be honest with
you.
Yeah,
maybe.
Now right. I kind of do. Yeah.
All right, let's get on Kickstarter. We'll find it.
Somebody is willing to make that movie.
Exactly. All right, Jake Snake Roberts. Anyways, moving on. Not to be rude.
No, it's a good point because I just got back from South by Southwest, and there's a ton of filmmakers there, obviously. And
yeah.
They're not the people that are making these in their backyards that just want to do it for shits and giggles, whatever the case is. I mean, they really take it seriously. Maybe some take it too seriously. But
yeah.
But I completely understand what you're saying. It makes total sense.
Well, there's a group of people out there, like, and I would include the twins. I would include Adam Robitel, you know, did Taking It Ever, Logan. And, you know, I enjoyed Jessica Cameron's movie. I actually thought Truth or Dare was pretty damn good.
Was it? I keep wanting to see that. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. You should check it out. It's one of those. It's not to say that we were nice and infernal or nice in utero, but they might be a little meaner. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
We always do the mean scale. But, no, there are some filmmakers out there. There is a danger, though. And, like, I've been doing this, you know, I'm 28, but a lot of people wouldn't know. Really got started doing shit when I was 17.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm coming up on that whole 10-year mark of trying to get so much made or trying to do this, that, and the other thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was lucky enough to start. Like, again, first thing I directed at Sony TV. So you kind of get thrown right to the wolves, you know, on the whole professional side, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that was really, that's what you were saying, when some people take it too seriously. And I remember a day when I was like, I was fucking weeping after getting so screamed at by an EP over there that I walked away. She never saw me cry. But she brought me to tears.
That bad.
And
wow.
And I, yeah, well, fun. But I think that was my moment when I was going to let a lot of stuff, stop taking it too seriously. Let the material be serious, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Let everything and respect people. But at the same time, stop treating everything like, look, we are not going to cure cancer, but we'll entertain the person who will. That's
a way to look at it. I like it.
See, that's my epitaph right there.
I never would have thought to put those words in that particular order, so I like it.
Yeah, I did one thing right today.
Hey, it's brilliant. So I'm going to put it on a T-shirt at some point.
Hashtag.
I got a question. Going back to your movie, was it Alyssa Kerner? Am I saying her name right?
Kooner, yeah. Alyssa Kooner.
Okay. She plays the daughter, Imogene. I'm always curious how hard it is to get young actors into that vibe that you want for the movie. I mean, how hard was it to coax her into what you wanted?
Well, Alyssa, the main thing I always say whenever she comes to mind, I always tell people to hire her. There's something, again, you saw it, but I don't want to ruin it. Uh-huh. If anybody listens to it earlier, that we had to do. It was pretty intense. But Alyssa knew she didn't have to do it. So we introduced her to the monster. You know, we got her like really like, and my sets, a lot of my family work on, my friends, whoever I'm fucking at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I know that came out really poorly, but them's the truth. I work with a very close knit group of people. And also I get along really well with the little ones. And my most recent ex would say, that's because you have the mindset of one.
Mm.
But Alyssa was great. I've had nothing but good luck with kids.
Really?
Nothing but good luck. I mean, I still hold strong to the statement that you should not hire kids and dogs or shoot at night.
So really,
if you don't have much money,
then you shouldn't have made this movie because all those things are part of this.
Yeah, so by about day three, mm-hmm. really started to realize that. But Alyssa was a joy, and 90% of casting a kid is casting the parents. It really is.
And good guy. I liked Andy and Heather. They both did a very good job as Nathan and Sophia. What about them got you interested?
Pure Okay. Well, we had two actors that were going to play Nathan and Sophia, but then there was a personal issue that is a little lesson to future directors of tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
If you even smell something going wrong in pre-production, kill it. Kill it right away.
Really?
Because I thought what would happen would be, I had these two actors cast, it'll get figured out. It didn't get figured out. So it got figured out the day before.
Oh, no, that's bad.
And one of my friends played Laurie Strode in Rob Zombie's Halloween, Scout Taylor Compton, amazing, amazing human being. So I'm freaking out. I send her the script. I'm like, can you fucking make it to set tomorrow? She's getting a tattoo and reading it at the same time. And she goes like, hold on. I'll call you after the tattoo. And she calls me up. She's like, I would love to do this, but you know, I would rather, neither of us, we made the choice.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been horrible to do to her agent. Like all of a sudden, yo, we want to do this shit tomorrow. You know, you don't do that. That's just, there was literally no way we could do it. So we ended up going like, Who else do we know? My manager used to manage the improv in Hollywood, so he knew Andy. And I just instantly fell in love with Andy. So that was like 2 days before production.
Oh, wow.
One day before production, we ended up getting Heather. And they hadn't met. Actually, the dog shit scene, you'll know what that means when you see the movie. That was the first time they were ever together.
The couple? Really?
Yeah, they hadn't met beforehand. I mean, I think they like were in makeup together, running lines really fast, but never like spoken. So it was really like, I think Noel Bruno, who's actually one of my favorite human beings, you have actors and you have human beings and actors, and she's one of my favorite of everything. And she was on the movie, I think, far longer. I think she knew Jose, who was Stan, longer than Nathan and Sophia knew each other in the movie.
Well, they did a good job pretending to have chemistry then. So that's all you really can hope for.
And also the thing I was able to hide behind is because the marriage was like in good places and then completely falling to hell.
Yeah. With a lot of F-bombs. A lot. I was starting to get to the point where it was almost like South Park. I'm like, I'm going to start counting at some point because this feels like a real couple and every 5 seconds they're like, fuck you and fuck that. Yeah. It felt
and
real.
And in front of the kid, too. I did that on purpose.
I believe it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, and I remember before every take, Alyssa, you know, those are not your words to say. You can't say that. Like, don't say that. And we did everything. We had the onset teachers and her parents were there all the time. So they read the script. Everybody read the script. And, you know, it was weird cursing so much in front of a little one like that. But it also, like, I really, again, in a lot of low-budget horror movies, nobody's really trying mm-hmm. anymore to push buttons. So I figure why not take a baseball bat to the buttons?
She's a professional. I'm sure she won't repeat those words ever.
Oh, yeah. Never, ever.
Never. I got a feeling like she ran to class. Like, guess what I heard today?
Yeah.
Guess what I heard today? Mommy and Daddy were fighting like you wouldn't believe.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think about the state of horror right now? I mean, you talked a little bit about how found footage is teetering off. What do you see as the current state of horror, being a horror director?
You know, here's the thing. Like when you start seeing as my material progresses, like specifically the thing we're doing this year, you know, I'm hoping that horror is going to go back to more of an auteur field where you could look for 2 seconds in any movie and go, that's that person's film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and not this kind of mishmash of just like slashers are in right now and monsters are in right now. No, well, fucker, let's do it all. But let's do it all. There is no reason why, you know, like an author I love, Brian Keene. You should see my bookshelf. It's amazing. It's like Brian Keene and, you know, fucking Bukowski.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I like to play all those things. Anyways, like, we have Crimson Peak in October.
Uh-huh.
And Guillermo has been a guy who's been fighting a fight for so long to do Classy. gothic horror.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if we get another American Mary, if we get another Tusk, I know a lot of people didn't like it, but you cannot say that you did not just see a movie where a dude got turned into a walrus.
If my opinion, I think that's half of a great movie, and then the other half, honestly, I think if you wouldn't have shown the walrus so blatantly so often, I think it would have worked a lot better.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think they had much time to do them, but at the same time, I agree with you. But at the same time, it's like any movie that can say that, though. Justin Long, Michael Parks, walrus person.
Never thought you would see that in your lifetime. I guarantee it.
You didn't, but that's what I'm hoping, man. I'm hoping, like, I grew up on Primus videos. You know, like, I'd watch a Universal Monster movie, and then I turn on MTV, and I get the Pixies and Primus and the Toadies or any of these great bands. And all this media, you know, and you always are that person. Like, you are what media you consume, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a thing to think where it's like, it's hard to say that there are really many auteur filmmakers shit kicking around these days, you know, specifically in genre. It's just not. It's, mind you, it's harder. Like, basically, you get a film finance. Generally speaking, with some help from my friends, mm-hmm. I tend to get my films financed myself. I have a business partner in South Dakota, but for the most part, we either go and we try and find a minimum guarantee so that we can guarantee our investment back, at least, or any other method that makes sense at the time. But financing films are much harder, and until we start to prove that movies like American Mary are making money. Movies like Infernal make money. Movies like Taking Deborah Logan make money.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if it's found footage. Fuck that. That's just a way to tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
People got to lay the fuck off that. Like that's what kills me. It's like, no, that's really just a method. It's just a method. Nothing else. You know, it's when they start to make it a genre. No, bitch, it is not a genre. It's a method.
Well, I think like, it's just that people need a word. You know what I mean?
They need
a way.
Something.
Yeah,
you gotta have that hashtag, man. It's like fuck hashtag. Off. Like, can we make Birdman, but as a horror film? I'm not saying like the same type of film. I'm just saying that type of auteur vision that was so unshakable. You know, and there are some. I've yet to see actually the Babadook, and I've yet to see a Girl Walks Home at Night.
Oh, Babadook was really good. Yeah,
that's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, you should
check. And I hear good things about Girl Walks Home too.
I've heard that It Follows. I've heard some good things about that too.
It Follows. See, the thing about what I'm seeing on It Follows is it follows a certain kind of, you know, path.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the way that the director achieved it, and you know, Elijah Wood's company. I have high hopes for them.
I was at the screening for The Boy at South by Southwest, and that's one of his.
They screened for The Boy. That was the name of the picture.
Yeah, that's the name of the picture. It's basically Dexter Begins. It's about a little boy that becomes a serial killer. Great film and very unsettling. Not horrific in any way, but it's very unsettling. And it was an interesting way to tell a horror story.
And I believe they were behind A Girl Who Walks Home at Night. But at any rate, they're what are they called? It's not Toad Road, is it?
I can't remember the name of this company. Yeah, I can't remember the name of it.
Whatever. You have people who care about telling stories within their horror films. You know, like Maniac. I'm sorry, people shit, moan, piss, kick, kvetch about remakes all day.
Mm-hmm.
I loved Maniac.
Maniac was great. Elijah Wood was great in that movie.
Incredible. But what are you going to do? Right? Like, that's the thing. It's just, we want to be more angry than we want to be delighted, I think, as a people. You know? Absolutely. And it doesn't make much sense to me. There's no hope in anything. But you got to see, like, on the inside, when you start knowing the caliber of filmmaker that takes meetings on films like Sharknado, you start going like, what? are you talking about? Like, how is this possible?
We suck as a species, that's why.
It's because we suck as a species, and until we, for some reason, we got some classics back in the day. But I think that we can reignite a renaissance. I know anybody listening to this podcast who watches Infernal, hates Infernal, is going to be like, oh, this fucker's talking about it, you just did this, blah, 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 which is great. I mean, totally post it on my Facebook, it'd be fun. But, like, it's just...
Just have more people.
It does, what's that?
Just have more people, more commenters. You got to have a little bit more internet hate. It'll make the world go by a little faster.
It's okay. They're still going to stalk the movie. That's really what matters.
That's true.
So
that is true.
Yeah.
Well, I do got to wrap it up, Brian. But before we go, can you tell us a little bit about what you want people to take away from Infernal?
You know, kind of a loaded question. With Infernal, I really want people to... It's something I want people to think about. It's not something that I'm not really there to give you the general scares that you can go to any other. You can go watch Ouija if you want those. You know, if you want a creepy kid movie, there's a bunch of them. We're a very different one. And because we're more about a family. And what happens between a married couple when you find out that there is something going wrong with your kid? And I think it's something that's kind of a call to arms. We'll look at relationships and try and figure out, you know, how to work through your own shit so it doesn't fall onto your kids. You know?
That's a good way to look at it. Now, what about Utero? Because this is also another movie about a mother with a demon in her. Is that what I'm reading right?
Well, nobody... Brian Coyne tends to have themes. And I like to do things in threes, but I don't know if I'm going to do a third because... 2014 and 2013 were completely ruined for me because of these movies.
Mm-hmm.
But Utero is about a unwed mother who's, you know, got a boyfriend who's checking out after finding out she's pregnant. She gets bit by a spider while she's pregnant.
Okay.
Like pretty far term down the little term process. And she starts to freak out thinking something's wrong. And we don't know if there is or if there isn't until the third act of the film.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah, it's my kind of stab, dun-dun-dun-dun, at Cronenbergian, you know, body horror meets mind horror.
So the kid,
repulsion meets fucking The Fly.
The kid's not going to come out Peter Parker. It's a horror movie.
That would be fucking amazing. See, Sony and I, we've been fighting for months and months.
That would be great. That would be a great cross-promotion. He just swings right into the Avengers. Right out of her womb, yeah. Straight into Avengers.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about doing something. I was like, a friend posted something on my Facebook, and I was like, you know what I need to do? I need something called Predatory Prep, which is just like all the demon kids from my movies go to like a Charles Xavier type school, but
like
it's run
it.
By Charles Manson.
That's great.
That's what we need to do.
That's an idea that hasn't happened. Get that done.
Maybe I'll play around with it. But, you know, it's just, that's what it is. And I guess... should I plug some things before we say goodbye?
Sure, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, okay, so Infernal's on Twiddle. It's a new website I started. Twitter. It's at Infernal Movie. The Facebook is Infernal Film. I'm on Twitter at Brian_Coyne. And I'm on Facebook, too. Same old deal. And I think I have a website called BrianCoyne.com. And I say horrible things on there.
And we should clarify, just to make sure people, it's Bryan, and it's Coyne.
Yeah, because my parents are total assholes. Can you believe that? Like, Y on Brian and Y on Coyne? Come on.
Yeah, I would actually be pronouncing it Coyne, if I were you.
Yeah, a lot of people have.
I would. Yeah. I would just make it like Kanye for white people.
And again, it's all, you didn't hear me when I was going off, going like, I'm a voice of a generation. You know, trying to say I'm the white Kanye. Anyways.
That's pretty funny.
There we go, man.
Oh, that's great. So what are you going to do after Utero?
After Utero, I got to move. I always hate this answer from anybody else. I'm going to try and jazz it up a little. So I'm not allowed to talk about it, but it does involve a tree, and it's not a remake of The Guardian. And a lot of talking and some... really fucked up death. Oh, pretty excited about it.
Okay, I have no idea what this is about. So
exactly, exactly. Oh, there's a lot of drugs. A lot of drugs.
Well, of course there are.
It has to be.
There's always drugs.
Yeah, and then after that, we're supposed to actually do something back to back with that, which that one is kind of a step outside my normal kind of always trying to talk about my own life sort of thing. Instead, I'm just talking about my politics because that's everybody wants to hear about my politics.
Is that still horror?
You know what? They can be considered horror.
Okay.
They're very violent, incredibly violent, but violence with a purpose, I would like to say.
Well, looking forward to that.
Well, you know, hopefully we'll announce those soon enough-ish, I hope. I'm praying to God.
I'm sure it'll all work out.
Well, thank you, sir.
Thank you for joining us, sir. Everybody check out Infernal, and that comes out on April 10th in theaters and on video on demand. And further details, you'll find out later. Whenever.
Yeah, there you go. Well, thank you so much for having me, sir.
All right, well, take care. Good luck with the release.
All right, thank you, sir. Bye.
Well, there you go, guys. That was my interview with Brian Coyne. And look for his new film, Infernal, in theaters and video on demand on April 10th. I think you could tell he's a pretty nice guy. That was a great conversation about horror and his career and what he sees in the world of horror and other films. Great guy to talk to. Just a real fun conversation. I hope you enjoyed it. Hope you'll check out his movie. For better or worse, just check it out. I think you'll be intrigued by some of the concepts in there, and hopefully you'll enjoy it. Once again, thanks for listening to the Hollywood Outsider podcast. We really hope you've enjoyed this special episode of our show. We try to bring you interviews with filmmakers in the world of independent cinema when we can. So I really hope you enjoyed Brian's thoughts. Remember to subscribe and review us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or whatever podcast app you currently use. Our normal show has a new episode every week, and it is available at thehollywoodoutsider.com. This is Aaron Peterson reminding you that the next time you head into the theater, buy popcorn.